Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, that study about the collision and the lopsided moon came from a magazine. It's a research magazine that's probably hidden behind a paywall. It's called Geophysical Research Planet. So it's based on research and a paper. It's not in the popular press, but it is a paper.
Oh, okay. That's good to hear. And apparently some people made some observations. Apparently they were looking at the material on the moon, the way it's distributed. And, they do have detailed pictures of the moon. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, many flights, including the, we have the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has been doing that now for 10 years. So maybe they're looking at those pictures, Roy, and they're coming up with this theory about another moon hitting our moon.
They're looking into things. There's some study that's called GRAIL. They're doing computer model simulations to kind of figure things out.
Okay. Come a long way from some of the orbiter missions, the first one around the moon, and now they're able to do all this stuff. Very good. Okay, just to get back to Earth a little bit, there's a project that NASA's involved with called NEMO. NEMO is an aqua facility, 62 miles, 62 feet underneath the ocean down in Florida. They call it the NASA Extreme Environment Mission Operations. And this has been going on for years, and you send a crew in there, usually about four people and usually two technicians. So usually you put in four scientists or engineers into NEMO, and they'll stay there for 10 days or so, 2 weeks, and they won't come up. You know, they'll be down. They'll go out in their suits. Some of them, they look like spacesuits because they're trying to duplicate what they do on if they were doing an actual mission, let's say to an asteroid or to the moon. So they do a lot of experimentation. And this one, they're going to send an astronaut up into that, you know, with that group. Somebody that's actually been up in space. This one's from the European Space Agency, Samantha Cristofetti. She spent many months. She's at the record of for women for European Space Agency on the space station. And, you know, now she's back. I guess they don't have another flight plan for her, but she's still very active with ESA and NASA. And so NASA's going to put her into the NEMO group with three other women to do some experiments and, you know, for NASA. So, people think, well, you come back as an astronaut, you do one flight and that's it. Well, not in this case. Some of them get involved with with politics or engineering. Some of them went off with private companies to work with them, developing their spacecraft. And this one is going to be doing another mission under the water, 62 feet down. I remember this astronaut. She was pretty good. Did a lot of press conferences and things. So that's Google Samantha Cristofetti. Get a lot of information there. You find out she'll be down there with they call them an astronaut candidate, Jessica Watkins. She hasn't gone up yet, but she will be going up. And there's another one, Shirley Papano. She's going up, an oceanographer from Florida. One other person, too, as well. And they usually go with two technicians to work on the HAP itself. Some things that are going on with NASA, you know, people think, well, all it is going into space. They're underwater as well. Let me drop it. wondering if Wesley was going to be on tonight because, you know, he has a scanning electron microscope. And this is the first time they're going to use a scanning electron microscope underwater, you know, in the half. So I guess they're going to use it to test things. They're going to bring up minerals, whatever they're going to do. And they're going to operate this thing. And for some reason, it's a big deal. It's not a small piece of equipment usually, so maybe they've managed to shrink things down. They've got the scanning electron microscope in the lab itself. I'm sure Wesley would love that. This is WS2M for the space portion of the TechNet. Okay, no comments or questions. India is launching another launch vehicle. They've launched about four so far this year. This is the PSLV, Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle. They have two. They have that, the geosynchronous one, which is a little bit bigger. And this one's about 140 feet tall. It's got all kinds of strap-on boosters and rockets. You know, they've launched plenty of stuff to space. You know, India is quite involved. Eventually, they plan on having a manned program, probably within about 10 years. This launch is bringing up X-band SAR radar, synthetic aperture radar system. A lot of countries have done that, and this is just another one. So that will be going up probably within a day or two. In fact, it might have gone up, but I believe it was supposed to go up on the 23rd. But I'll have to check. I usually go to one website that tells you all the planned rocket launches worldwide. Okay, another piece of information regarding the Gateway system. In the United States, we want to put up space station. My guess is going to be international, but a space station around the moon called the Gateway. And what's going to happen is you're going to need at least three modules to go up: a propulsion module, a docking module, and eventually a habitat module. Apparently, NASA has given out a contract to develop the Gateway power propulsion module, which is going to consist of a 60 kilowatt solar electric propulsion system. They call them SEPs, SEPs, solar electric propulsion, and 50 kilowatt is big. I mean, you know, a space station is like 125 kilowatt output. That's a massive solar panels all over everywhere. And this thing plans on having 50 kilowatts, so it's still quite large. How are they going to do that? They're going to use the ROSA system, which is a rollout type of solar panel. It's not going to open up like an accordion. It's going to just roll out. And by doing that, they can get rather large solar panels, and that will give them the 50 kilowatts. They need that for pretty tall thrusters, ion thrusters. This way they'll be able to stay in a lunar orbit. They call it a halo orbit for years on end with hardly any power. Just be able to maneuver a little bit here and there with a 50 kilowatt solar electric propulsion. So the contract was given out apparently to Maxar Technologies. Maxar, most people don't know the name anymore because they bought up the other company, SSL, which is Space Systems Loral, which has been around since the 1950s, building satellites for many countries, including the USA. And apparently they were bought up by Maxar. And Maxar was another group. Before that, it was the MDA, I think they called it, which is a company from Canada that built the robotic arm for the shuttle and the robotic arm for for the space station, the Dextra robot that's attached to the robotic arm on the space station. So they're heavily involved with anything to do with robotic arms. Well, now they changed their name to Maxar and bought up Space System Morale, and apparently they have a contract for the first unit for the for the gateway system that eventually that will be able to send Orion spacecraft to dock with it, and over time we'll be able to send people down to the surface of the moon. If there are other systems eventually work out, companies like Blue Origin plan on building a lander to first bring materials down and eventually people. Lockheed is heavily involved with that part of it as well. Also, it was all supposed to be done by originally 2028. Now the Trump administration is pushing for 2024. And from anything I'm reading, Congress is not going to go along with that. I'm going to go for the earliest 2028. They need Congress to give them an extra $1.6 billion. And that's just the beginning. They need more after that. And I know Congress, the way things are going, I'm not going to give them 10 cents. So I'm going to push that back to 2028. Which is good, going to be good enough. Let me drop it. Talking about India, in about 2 months they plan on launching another vehicle to the moon, and this time it will be on the bigger rocket that they use, the geosynchronous launch vehicle, they call it. And they'll have three components that will go to the moon. One will be an orbiter, and the lander will separate from the orbiter and land on the moon. And then once on the moon, near side of the moon, by the way, they plan on having a rover. So if they succeed, there'll be another country that could say that they've done what Russia has done, what the United States has done, and what China has done. So, hope they make it. They'll be launching, I believe, in June or so. I know they got pushed back to July because they were talking about launching right around the same time 50th anniversary was for Apollo 11. So, probably mid-July, and they'll be landing in September. It doesn't take them 3 or 4 days to get there like Apollo. They go into these long elliptical orbits, and every time they get to perihelion, the lowest point, they ignite the engine, and it gives them an extra little push, and eventually they break orbit with Earth and go into lunar orbit, and from there they'll do the opposite and eventually go into the circular orbit, and then eventually down to the surface of the moon on the near side. And I believe they want to go to the southern portion of the moon. That's where everybody wants to go now, the southern portion of the moon. There's a crater there called Shackleton, and I believe that, among others, have frozen ice at the bottom of it. So you could set up shop there, dig up the ice, melt the ice. That's been there for a billion years, and create water out of it, create oxygen, hydrogen. They'll be able to have fuel to fly off the surface eventually, and you'd be able to have enough fuel for to recombine it and have fuel cells produce electricity the way we used to do with Gemini and the Apollo mission. And you could also breathe the oxygen. So India wants to go to where everybody wants to go to, Shackleton Crater, near the South Pole. Why the South Pole? Because they stay in daylight more than the other parts of the moon. The way the moon is situated, you really want to be on a south pole when you first land. If you plan on staying for long periods of time, you can set up solar panels on the surface of the moon for electricity. NASA has plans on setting up fission reactors, small fission reactors on the moon, and solar panels. So there you go. Let me drop it. Another test coming up this summer called the AA2 test. It's the center board mission for NASA. This whole system that's going to be going to the moon, the SLS system, is going to be mounted on four RS-25 hydrogen helium engines, the same engines that flew on the space shuttle. And above the engines will be this big massive tank, similar to the external tank, except bigger, on a space shuttle, carrying liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. And then you're going to have two booster rockets, port side, starboard side, each one producing 3.5 million pounds of thrust. So the combination will be around 10 to 12 million pounds. Eventually they're going to, you know, raise that as time goes on. But to give you an idea, the Saturn V that went to the moon, 7.5 million pounds of thrust. So this will be 10 and a half when they first start off. But now you're going to put astronauts on top on the Orion spacecraft. You need a launch abort system. They call it an LAS. And they need to test the LAS. And what they're going to do is they're going to put this whole setup, the test article. So it's not going to be the real one. Test article of Orion. On top of that, they're going to put the launch abort system, which will consist of three types of engines. One will be the one that will, the larger one that would be able to pull the whole vehicle away. In case there was a problem with the booster, we'll be able to pull it away on the launch pad or, you know, on its way to orbit. These four rockets, solid booster rockets with fire. It's one solid booster rocket, but it has four ports that the thrust comes out of. It will pull the whole vehicle away from the booster. And then you got another set of rockets at the very top, smaller ones. It's actually one rocket with a bunch of valves, eight valves. Well, like panels that open and close independently of one another. So depending on which one is open, thrust will be coming out of it. The computer will tell which valves to be opening, and the idea of that is to keep the whole vehicle from not, you know, tumbling as it separates from the booster, and to keep everything stable, because eventually it's going to release everything, and eventually you're going to want parachutes to be coming out. You also want the crew facing in the right direction on the way down. And so that they'll be firing to make sure that works okay. And then there's the jettison rockets, another set of rockets. And that will be for pulling the whole launch abort system away from the capsule itself. It's covering the capsule. And, you know, you can't leave this on because eventually you're going to have parachutes that are going to open up, so you need to have a jettison system. The rockets will come on and pull it away. During a regular launch, those would be the only rockets that would normally fire, because as you're going uphill, eventually you would have to pull the launch abort system away from Orion anyway before you get to orbit. So the jettison rockets would again do the same thing, pull the cover off of Orion and separate from the whole rocket booster at that time. So that's global LAS, the launch abort system. It's all attached to the top of the Orion spacecraft, and they plan on doing this test, I believe July 2nd, I've never seen her. I don't know if that's changed, but roughly the beginning of July. And they plan on putting it on a smaller booster. I believe it's a peacekeeper booster, you know, a booster that they used to use for nuclear launches, you know, if you were at war. So they put this peacekeeper booster down, and they're going to put the Orion spacecraft on top of that with the launch abort system on top of that. And then they put a shroud around the bottom of the, you know, around the Peacekeeper rocket anyway, because they needed the diameter to be the same as Orion, which I think is around 16 and a half feet. They just want this, you know, smaller diameter, I think 14 foot or 12 foot diameter rocket sitting there. The aerodynamics won't work for the test. So they plan on launching it from Launch Complex 46 in Florida. It'll take out over the ocean, go, I don't know, maybe 6-8 miles high, and then the test will occur. The test article, the Orion test article, doesn't have parachutes on board, so, you know, they're not going to test that part of it. They don't need to. They know that will work. They've done many, many tests independently. So when that comes down, it's just going to crash into the ocean, you know, and that's going to be it for the test article, they call it, for Orion. Any comments, questions? This is WS2N. Okay. The Starlink launched on May 23rd from Launch Complex 40. Was launched by SpaceX on a Falcon 9 rocket. And this was the one I was waiting for. You know, it was supposed to go off a week or so ago, but they had delays. One was weather delays. Another one, they wanted to update the software on all the satellites. This is Starlink. We talked about it last week. This one has 60 independent satellites that were all going to be launched together. So Falcon 9 booster goes off. First 2.5 minutes, you're riding on 9 engines all the way up to orbit. They want to eventually get to a 350-mile orbit, but this thing took them to around 250 miles. So the first stage separates, and that goes back down, and it landed on a drone ship in the Atlantic Ocean. That was the third time that booster has been used, so third landing, safe landing for that booster. Second stage pushes the whole assembly up to 250 miles, and then eventually they start rotating the whole vehicle, the fairing and everything, with the second stage. And I'm not talking about rolling; I'm talking about end for end. So, you know, the back end of the motor is coming up over your head, and the whole thing starts spinning. The idea of that is to launch all 60 satellites at one time. They're more loaded in the fairing. The fairing separated. By the way, the fairings went down on parachute, parasails. They call them, all the way down to the ocean. And two ships were down in the ocean that picked them up, and they plan on reusing these fairings, these $6 million fairings, instead of just throwing them away. But the fairings open, and the satellites all came out at one time. This thing is rotating, so now it's got centrifugal force, and it's rotating end for end, you know. So when they released it, I saw it live on the website. They all came out at once. They're stacked together. There's nothing in between each one of them, and they, because the ones on the very end have more inertia, because it's at the end of the centrifugal force compared to the ones in the middle or the end, they start separating first, and eventually they walk away from each other, you know, and maybe they're going to bump into one another a little bit. They didn't care. But these are all communication satellites that are going to be used for broadband, and sure enough, they eventually found out all 60 satellites are communicating with the ground stations. So the whole contraption worked. They had solar panels that that opened up. They didn't use the ROSA type, the rollout ones. They used the standard ones that just folded out. But I can see them using the rollout types in the future. There's only one panel that comes out, just on one side of the spacecraft. But it's big enough to create enough power, enough wattage, voltage to power a whole ion thruster. So now you have 60 satellites, each one with its own ion thruster, and each one operating. So I know we talked about this last week, but you know that's the deal on Starlink. They're not done, of course. Starlink is going to eventually have 12,000 satellites. They don't need that many to operate, and I think they want to get in the probably 2,000 category, but they need to eventually put 12,000 satellites up in space, or in different inclinations. So, not to be outdone, Amazon is now announced that they want to do more or less the same thing, but they think they can only do it with 3,000 satellites. Only 3,000. So, I'm going to get to a point where, you know, you're going to look up at night and you're not going to be able to see the moon. I know that's not true, but that you start to wonder. This WS2F. One other topic I really wanted to cover was the launch of a rocket that was developed by a college. This is the first time a rocket made by students in a college, in this case, the University of Southern California, launched a successful rocket to go to space. I mean, it made it above the common line. Their rocket was called the Traveler 4. That's because Travel 1, 2, and 3 didn't make it. They've been trying this since 2005. They started developing their rockets. And I'm unable to save that YouTube, but if you go to Traveler 4 rocket YouTube, and you can bring up this 4.5 minute, 5 minute video of these young people from California launching this rocket, you know, preparing the rocket and eventually launching it, and successfully coming back from above the common line. The common line 62 miles, so they got above it, and first time a college was able to do that. And actually, they're very happy about that. But it's interesting to watch these guys put that kind of effort into it. So again, that's go to Traveler 4 rocket. I guess you could put in University of Southern California, USC, and you can check that out. I did. It was very well done. In fact, they have a camera looking out. Looks like it's looking out of a porthole on the payload, and you can see the Earth down below. You know, so pretty good. Any comments or questions? And one other test is complete. Test by the Boeing company. They're the ones building the Starliner. They call it the Starliner is spacecraft that they have been building to eventually go to the International Space Station, probably by the end of this year, if all goes well, I mean, with a crew. The first launch of this particular vehicle, which would be able to carry a crew, would be in August. A very similar idea to what SpaceX did in March. SpaceX launched the Dragon, and it docked successfully with the space station, eventually came back 5 days later. This one's going to do the same thing. It's done by Boeing. It has the capability of eventually bringing 4 people up at a time to the space station. And looks like all is finally going well for Boeing as far as this goes. You know, they got airplane problems, but this seems to be working out. About 6 to 8 months ago, they were testing thrusters on the ground, testing, you know, making sure everything worked good. And when they shut it off, the hydrazine fuel started leaking, unfortunately, and not a big leak, but enough to stop everything, and let's rebuild everything. Let's change the valve. Let's change whatever it takes to make sure this doesn't happen again. Well, that time has passed. They've done whatever it takes, and they put this on a test stand, and they were able to test their escape engines. They don't have a launch abort system like I described earlier. They don't have one attached to the top of Starliner that would pull the Starliner away from the Atlas V booster in this case, if there was a problem. But they have a pusher system, so it's loaded with fuel, the vehicle itself has got the capability of pushing itself away from the booster if need be. And they tested the thrusters, and they tested the, you know, they have many different sized different thrusters on board Starliner. And apparently they're all running off the same fuel, it's hydrazine fuel. So it looks like, from what I was reading, they successfully passed a test. So it looks like they're going to probably, right now, they're going to probably beat SpaceX to the space station with a crew. It looked like SpaceX was winning. They were ahead, but, you know, a few weeks ago, SpaceX took their crew vehicle that had just gone up to the space station for 5 days and came back and landed successfully in the Atlantic Ocean. They took it and they put it on a test stand. They wanted to test the thrusters out. They were going to test eventually in an abort system. And right before they were going to ignite the Super Draco engines, the whole thing blew up. I mean, gone. It just, you know, from what I understand, there's like hardly anything left. And now they're working on that problem. What blew it up? You know, what are we going to do to correct it? What are we going to do to make it safe? And eventually, they're going to probably have to retest, of course. So they have plans of doing an abort test. And within a couple of months, they were going to send a crew of two up to the space station for a test. This time with a crew. They were going to spend a couple of weeks there and come back. And now that looks like that's all on a backfire until they straighten things out. Boeing has caught up with their problem. If they don't have any other problems, they should have this first vehicle docked with the space station without a crew this August, and then with a crew, maybe by the end of this year. They're looking at November, possibly, but, you know, if there's delays, you know, maybe December or January of next year. But that's the story with the two crew vehicles that are being developed for the International Space Station that will be leaving from U.S. soil not too long from now. And that's pretty much it for the SpaceNet report. I know it seems like a lot, but that's the way it is. We'll be back next week. Turn it over to Dick and see if he wants to make any comments. If not, we'll turn it back over to Roy. K2RIW, this is WS2N.
Turn with a question.
Oh, okay. Question, go ahead.
WS2N, this is Whiskey Bravo 2 Golf X-Ray Mike. Paul, is the Starliner launch and landing similar to the shuttle operation?
Oh, no, not at all. The closest one to that will be eventually Dream Chaser. It looks like a small shuttle. And the Dream Chaser will go up. That's probably 2 years away, too, without a crew. And then as the years go on, maybe they eventually might have a crew on that. But that takes off vertically on a rocket and comes back and lands on a runway. But, yeah, Starliner by Boeing, it's a capsule type of system. They're going to launch it on the top of the Atlas V rocket. It's going to have two booster rockets attached to it. So they're going to call it Atlas N, what it's called, Matt, and for no bearing. It's going to have two rockets for the second stage, Centaur rockets, which is liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. Right now, the Atlas second stage always has one. This will be the first time it'll have two, so that's a little different. And that's the launch configuration for Boeing Starliner. Coming back, it's going to actually come back again with a, you know, heat shield, parachute. But it's not going to land in the water. They plan on landing, the first one anyway, is going to land out in Utah, out in the desert army, I think it's some kind of army base. It's like a desert out in Utah. And it's going to come down, and you know, parachutes coming down. Eventually the heat shield will separate. Now expose these big airbags. So as you get closer to the earth, these airbags will just pop open, you know, and that's going to cushion the impact as the crew hits the ground. So that's the story on Starliner. So yeah, no, that's not like the shuttle, unfortunately. Back to you.
Thank you, Paul. Wishing everyone a memorable Memorial Day. WB2GXM out.
Yeah, you too. That's true. And that's tomorrow, officially. Very good. Let's see, is any other questions or comments for the next? Dick, are you there? K2RIWWS2N.
I just am, Paul. Were you asking me something?
Just trying to get back to you. I've come to the end of the list, and I know you have, we only have 8 minutes left, so. And I just answer the one question, and nobody else has any other questions, and I'm going to turn it back to you if you have any comments. If not, we'll close.
Thank you, Paul. No, I have no further comments. Let's see if Roy does. Roy? You can tie the ribbons on. AC2GS, K2LIW.
Okay, Dick, I'll tie ribbons. Once again, I always like to tell people, do you have any mailbag questions? Do you have any topics? Do you have any questions? Do you want to refute whatever I said? The email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com, and all of the links are available on my link page, including one of Paul's at roy.ac2gs.com. So that's as it always is. I want to hope everyone enjoys tomorrow's Memorial Day and have a great week. And by the way, Limewalk is going to have an outdoor ham fest June 9th, and I'll be there to show off my little 3D printed stuff once again. So I hope to meet a lot of you guys out there.
Very good, Roy. Very good. And we'll be here next week. And it's good if you go over to Roy's website and you look up that, you click on that one thing that's on the, getting a ticket to go to Mars. It's pretty cool. I mean, they give you a boarding pass and everything. I got mine. I'm ready to go. Ready to go to Mars. 73WS2N is clear.
Paul, what ticket number did you get?
I have it written down here somewhere. 1 million, what the heck was it? I'm up to 1,226,459. I did that the other day, and already they're almost up to 2 million, I think.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you, you all. 73, bye-bye for now. K2RIW, we're clear.
Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. WQVL Repeater System. tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Victoria. Pomona, New York, listening to me.
set tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Let's see, from 30, where were we, 32nd and 11th? 10th and 11th, something like that. We walked up to 44th and like 6th to a restaurant, and we had dinner there. Then we had to walk back to the train. So we did a lot of walking that day, about 12,000-13,000 steps.
Copy, copy. Well, we were at the Hudson Yards too, but we were going through it to get to the High Line. Yeah, it's just a big overpriced mall and that thing in the middle, that step thing, whatever you call that thing. You know, massive lines and everything, so we just walked right past it.
And you missed nothing. I have to tell you, it's a big tourist attraction ripoff. That's all it is. And I can't believe we went there, but my friends wanted to go there, so we went with them. Oh, well. You know, could be worse. You know, I could have bought something in that mall.
You know, we didn't even bother going into the mall. We walked out front. We took, walked past it, and I said, no, this has got to be way, way overpriced.
Oh, it was more than way, way overpriced. It was way, 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 way overpriced. My God, my wife and my friend's wife, they were looking at everything, and the numbers were astronomical. They walked into a store, and they looked at a pair of shoes, $695. I mean, they're probably not worth more than 10 bucks.
Now, wasn't it P.T. Barnum said there's one born every minute?
Well, ain't that the truth? Oh, well, what are you going to do? Stuff happens, you know? But it worked out all right. We had a nice dinner, and we enjoyed that. We enjoyed our company. So that was the nice part of it all. But I was walking around singing that song, you know, I Hate Manhattan.
Yeah, I hear you. And the other good thing we did yesterday, on the walking back toward the train station, they had B&H Photo was open. It's Sunday. You know, they're closed on Saturdays. So I just stopped in for about 15 minutes.